permission, should you choose to accept it, is to
go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Roll for initiative.
From the silver screen to the GM screen, Never Say Die asks, what could we learn from movies to enhance a role-playing game experience? This season, we are getting the band back together with heist films, where the mastermind hatches an elaborate, usually non-violent plan to get a MacGuffin from a difficult location with the help of two or more specialists.
I'm Rafe Telsch, film critic.
And I'm Drew Meyer, gaming enthusiast.
And in this intermission episode, we'll explore anything we missed in our Rogue One, a Star Wars story episode, discuss movies and games that have caught our attention, check out some listener feedback, and Drew will select the next heist film we will be reviewing and gamifying.
That was an entire journey, let me tell you. I thought I knew what I was doing. Things have changed dramatically in ways I am not sure I still haven't decided which one I'm doing. I've got two.
I can't tell you the number of times I've sat down and had that exact same approach. And I got to tell you, Drew, we had, we'll say, an inordinate amount of time in between our Ocean's 11 episode and our intermission. And I feel like we just recorded our Rogue One episode and now we're turning around and recording this because we're actually back on schedule. So I feel right. Like I almost feel rushed.
I get that. I completely understand that. The other day, I sat down and said, I need to watch another heist movie to really solidify if the choice that I'm making is correct. And what I did instead was, realizing that I only have six choices, not knowing what you're going to pick, I categorized all the movies that I have into different types of heist genre. So like, I have my own internal, I want to make sure that the genre is covered. There are so many movies, we probably could do another season of heist. So, I'm not saying that we can't or will, but it's possible. So I was just like, okay, this genre, I only need one representative of this if I'm going to choose it. So rather than watching movies and doing the thing that's actually probably important, I did the thing that brings me calming joy, which is alphabetizing and collecting and organizing. Honestly, I don't understand why I didn't become a librarian sooner.
Well, Drew, before we get into our actual intermission, this is a podcast about movies and role-playing games, so we do like to talk a little bit at the beginning about movies and role-playing games and podcasts that have caught our attention. So movie-wise, what have you seen worth recommending lately? Keeping in mind, that it feels, again, like it's been like yesterday that we recorded the first episode. It's been 2 weeks, but...
Right. It's essentially been a week since we dropped the episode. Rafe, I've watched no movies in that time period because I finally listened to the many people who have been recommending Taskmaster to me, the UK show Taskmaster. So what little free time I've had, and it's been a busy couple of weeks, has been spent watching Taskmaster, which, if you haven't seen it, it is, how do you gamify life? Yes, there you go.
now, did you start at the beginning, or are you watching the newer stuff that's on YouTube?
Rafe, have I, the time that you've known me, in any of the assignments that you've given me, have I ever started at the beginning? No, I started at the one that has the British celebrities that I, the most British celebrities that I like. So I'm watching Series 4, which has two hosts from the Great British Bake Off and Joe Lycett from the Off Menu podcast, which I love. And then like the other two that are in there are also really excellent. And it is yet to disappoint. Sure. There hasn't been a down moment. You're a fan of this show, right?
Oh yeah, we watched the first two seasons. I think you can only get the first three or four, and then they started airing the new seasons on YouTube. And season 17 just started like 2 weeks ago, so we have been watching that as they've been released on Friday nights. Where that's kind of our Friday night entertainment.
That's awesome. The new episodes. Well, the very first episode I did watch was the second or third episode of season 17. It popped up in my feed, and I was like, everyone keeps on telling me I should watch this. Oh, it's Nate from Ted Lasso. I'll go ahead and I don't understand why he's dressed as Dracula. I probably should watch episode one. Episode one isn't currently the one directly in front of me. I'm feeling lazy. Boop. Yeah, I think I was supposed to be doing chores, and I did that instead, and that was
a week
ago. I'm
seeing a theme to today's episode.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of that. How about you? Have you watched anything that you've enjoyed that you
would
recommend?
You know, I had the Hitchcock class that I talked about a couple of episodes ago, and that's over with. And now I'm in a class that is requiring reading. I read a 466-page book over the last 3 days. So less time for watching stuff. But over the weekend, my girlfriend and I did sit down and end up watching the East Rail 177 trilogy. And you are giving a confused look. We saw that Split and Glass had arrived on Netflix, so we jumped back and watched Unbreakable first, because I had never seen Glass, so we went back. Unbreakable is probably my favorite, if not my second favorite, M. Night Shyamalan film. I like Split a lot, and Glass was incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, there was a time, a very long period of time, in which I described Unbreakable as my favorite superhero movie. It's definitely top two. Shyamalan's tricky. Some of his movies I rate higher than others, but then it shifts with the mood changes. I have yet to see Split. It's one that I have actually in my 2024 queue. I know everything that happens in Glass because I listened to a podcast where they just reviewed it, because I'd heard so much bad stuff about it. I'm like,
I wish I had heard more about it going in, so I would have known not to waste my Sunday evening watching it. It was, for especially when you start with the foundation of Unbreakable, it's like there's so much potential, there's so much promise, and it just is so utterly disappointing. But we also have been watching the live action Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix. We've got one episode left to go on that. And as a fan of the animated series, not a diehard fan, I've only watched it once through because I was introduced to it like 2 or 3 years ago. I'm really enjoying it. It's pretty good. I've got some qualms with it, but I'm enjoying it. My girlfriend has never watched the animated series and she's enjoying the live action.
You really missed an excellent segue, which could have been, speaking of M. Night Shyamalan, we're watching the live action Avatar the Airbender.
No. There is no Warren Bossing set. No, I mean, M. Night Shyamalan never made an Avatar movie. That never happened.
He didn't. It was an Avatar movie.
Oh, yeah. I've never watched it. I haven't either. I was told by a friend that I should never watch it, at least not without copious amounts of alcohol. I watched the trailer and I feel like I've seen enough.
I don't want to delve too much into negativity. That's not really what we do here. But I have to admit that every once in a while, I find it very fun to taunt my friends and coworkers who are diehard Avatar fans by asking them questions about the live action movie and watching them get so, so angry. And honestly, I feel that that kind of leads us into a conversation about Rogue One, which is, I feel like those conversations are definitely leading me into the dark side. But we'll set aside movies and maybe talk about some role-playing games. Have you gotten a chance to play anything in the 10 days since last time we talked?
I have not. My D&D group finally is going to have a session this coming Sunday. So when this comes out, it is, I think, the day before this comes out. So when this airs, we have just finally had our first D&D session in a couple of months. So I'm sure I'll talk about that on the next episode. I am excited. I did get my Kickstarter for Deathmatch Island by Evil Hat Games. I'm nice. Very stoked for this. I'm looking forward to it a lot. I don't know that I'll have anybody to play it with, so I'm just hoping it's a good read, basically.
Right. Well, yeah, I've got a couple of RPG deliveries recently where I'm just like, I haven't even had the time to read them yet, but I'm excited. I know that quite a few of my Kickstarters are on their way.
Carrying the thread, that's where I am with the Avatar The Last Airbender RPG. Like, I love it. Yeah. It looks beautiful. It's taking up space on my shelf, and eventually I'll get around to reading it.
Honestly, just looking at all the beautiful spines of the games I know I'll never play is sometimes enough to just kind of quell the fury in my mind.
I, I want to play. If nothing, Baldur's Gate 3 has been making me feel more and more like, man, I approach video games with such a hack and slash mentality, and I want to get back into like actual role playing again at some point. Not sure. DMing. I mean, I love DMing. It's great. I am, as you said last episode, kind of the eternal DM. But every once in a while, it's just fun to be on the other side of the table. I need to find a way to do that again soon.
I get it. I haven't played anything. Like you said, my teen group at the library is meeting on Saturday. So by the time this airs, we'll have played. It's going to be an interesting one. I try to create new environmental mechanics every time I play with them.
Nice.
It's just a mess with them, but also it keeps me kind of interested in the game. Like they're going to have to appease a culinary god, the Unwavering Maw, by hunting down and killing a chimera for a feast that's happening, but the meat cannot be tainted, so they can't use poison. They can't use flames or lightning, lest they cook the meat the wrong way. So I'm limiting them to how they can actually attack this thing. So I think that's going to be kind of interesting. I haven't done that with players before, limiting. You know, they're probably going to get upset because quite a few of them, you know, their answer to everything is fireball or a lightning bolt. So. And let's see, while I haven't played yet, I have created my character for it came from the Late, Late, Late Show. So we're doing a space opera movie.
Right.
And you guys remember this game was created in 1993. I have chosen the bodybuilder actor. So a lot of physical stats, very little mental stats, very low acting score.
So going through life.
There you go. So what's great is you create not only a actor, but also the character that they're playing in the movie. So Chet Handsome will be playing Tank, Space Tank. So yeah, I'm excited. That's going to be kind of fun. But I have been playing a game, not a role-playing game. I like to start my morning with a Wordle, you know, a connection, something along those lines. On Rafe, I have found one that's even better. Well, for me, and possibly for you. Cinematrix is only about a couple of months old. Vulture puts it out. It is a 9-square grid game. So you have your, let's see how best to describe it. You have 3 actors. So 3 of your squares on the side are actors, and then above are movies, but they have qualifiers. So, right. You know, the other day it was like Jodie Foster movies, but you have to choose a Jodie Foster movie that was from between 1990 and 1999. And then the next one is made $1 million. And the next one is stars somebody who has played Batman, you know, that kind of a thing, but you can't reuse the movies. And right. you only get 9 guesses. So if you miss one, it's over, which I think is a fault. You never want to have.
You can turn on an unlimited mode in it.
Oh, you can't. Great.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't done that yet. I've pretty much won all of them. There was one the other day that I disqualified myself because I had to go into IMDb and look them up because sadly I didn't know who they were. but what I like about it is if you choose movies, it looks at everyone who has selected those movies. And if you choose one that a lower percentage of the population who's played chooses, you get a higher score.
Right.
So everyone can succeed. But then you get higher scores as kind of your bragging rights. So yeah, that was fun. I've gotten into that recently.
Someone introduced me to that, and I had the problem with, I get up in the morning and I do my Wordle and my connections and my framed, and it didn't seem to have new games every day for me, so it fell out of rotation because it just wasn't a daily thing.
I don't think they do it on the weekends.
Yeah, maybe that's when I discovered it. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, we kind of dropped off from talking about crowdsourcing games, even though there's a ton of them out there that are, you know, caught our eye. But this one we have to mention because by the time this episode airs, it'll be just like a day or two before the Core of Discovery, a game set in the world of Manifest Destiny, drops. And this is created by our friend Senfu Lim, and the Manifest Destiny is one of my favorite graphic novel series. It's one that I really early on proposed the idea of writing a role-playing game for and came up with ideas based off of a system that I was working for at the time, which the less said about that system, probably the better. But what I love about it is that all the artwork is done by a friend of yours.
Yes. Yeah. That so, we didn't even know we had this connection.
No, not until I bought pages from him at a comic convention. So yeah, I'm excited about that one. I'm going to back it as soon as it drops on Kickstarter. I'm going to get that one because it's, you know, a game designer I like. It's a world I like, and I know the mechanics are going to be really cool. So it looks really fun. And I guess the other thing, too, is kind of Kids on Bikes related. One of my favorite graphic novel series from the last 10 years is a series called Lumberjanes. It is about an all-inclusive girls camp that really emphasizes, friendship and really cool stuff. But it's also they fight monsters and it dropped 10 years ago and they're releasing hardback versions of the collections. And it's just a great read. And it's for a great read for all ages. And when I mean all ages, it's not just for young people. I'm saying like, I enjoy it enough that I'm going to drop quite a bit of money to get hardcover versions of them because I don't read single issues anymore. so yeah.
Nice. How about podcasts? You listen to anything lately that you want to recommend?
The only thing is Blank Check is continuing to do their John McTiernan and because they are good. They covered this last week, the Thomas Crown Affair, which is, I think, an excellent heist movie. It doesn't qualify for, our discussion on a regular episode. It certainly, if it did, I would absolutely nominate it, but because Thomas Crown essentially is a crew of one, that doesn't work. But it's a really interesting episode because I learned a lot about the movie that I hadn't, explored otherwise. How about you? Listen to anything?
No, nothing here.
All right. Well, there you go. That seems simple enough. And we're out.
All right. All right. Well, it's time for us to take a look at our second opinions about Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, where we talk about things we may have missed as far as the movie goes or as far as our role-playing game gamification goes. But I want to start off kind of talking about something that's not quite either of those, something that didn't quite fit into our previous discussion. And that is my regular D&D group. Recently, one of their adventures was to break into a prison. And I decided to kind of go Star Wars inspiration for the prison. So first of all, they were told there was only like 3 or 4 guards on patrol a la the first season of The Mandalorian. And when they showed up, there were a heck of a lot more than 3 or 4. But then when there was an underground prison, when they descended underground, there were metallic plates on the ground as they were making their way in. And one of the security systems was that there was a glyph of Witch Bolt that when activated would electrify the floor. So all of the guards and the security dogs were wearing like rubber booties. Mm-hmm. Whereas as soon as it hit the floor, everything else was being electrified, which I totally took from Andor.
Right. Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. It was fun watching them try to figure out how to deal with it. They dealt with it in, as usual, a very creative way that I wasn't expecting. But they took some damage from it, and mostly they had some fun. So, we call that a success.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know about you, but I have what I like to call fixer dreams, which is a problem presents itself. I usually go to sleep, and then in my dreams, I solve these problems. And if I can remember when I wake up to write it down, I have an answer. And I had a fixer dream the other day that was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we didn't discuss this on our last episode. I can't wait. I'll write this down. And I think this can be a really good topic of conversation. Did not write it down. Have no idea what it was. And so honestly, I have nothing, no second opinions about the last episode. I think we did a really good job covering just about everything with it. It irks me that I don't remember what it was because it could be that maybe in the dream it was giving it more importance than it actually probably needed.
The other thing I wanted to throw in, speaking of Kickstarters and such, I backed a Kickstarter by Sly Flourish, who does the Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master series, Lazy Dungeon Master's workbook and such. And when I backed it, I didn't have any of his books, so I picked up a pack that sent me all the books and the new one that they were doing the Kickstarter on. And I ended up on their email list as well. And what's been fun is, about once a week sends out a brief email going, here's some ideas on this. I mean, here's some ideas on this kind of adventure, that kind of thing. And I mean, very much in the vein of the Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master, try to, not work harder, work smarter, not harder type thing. But a couple of weeks ago, it was running infiltration and heist adventures.
Oh, wow.
So this is up on slyflourish.com. I'll put a link in the show notes, but I thought you might find this interesting when he's talking about preparing infiltration or heist adventures, the things he thinks to focus on, clarifying the goal and ensuring it's important enough the characters are willing to risk their lives for it, choosing a map, because unlike dungeon crawls, there's a good chance the players will get the map in advance, filling the location with details, listing out inhabitants and understanding their behaviors, what they're doing when they're not being watched, how they're going to act, how they're going to react, listing potential complications, and ensuring there are multiple paths to achieve the goal so that the players have some freedom to do it the way that they want to. And then when you're running the infiltration adventure, it's going to be broken down into, see if this sounds familiar, Drew, planning,
Mm-hmm.
Choosing roles, the heist execution, flashbacks, and he even says a concept taken from Blades in the Dark, complications, the climax, and the escape. So we're on the right track, nice. Drew, because we're not the only Love ones it. Having these ideas. It's some nice justification.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, something like that is always great to just kind of see validation for the conversations that we've already had.
Right.
But one of the things that games like Blades in the Dark kind of stress is, you know, flashbacks are there so you don't have to prepare as much. And I ran a year-long campaign where the heist was going to be the end of the thing. And, several months of them infiltrating, and we worked on, like, creating new identities for themselves and all that. And they had a lot of fun with it. And then the heist completely went kind of awry because, you know, something more fun happened. all the planning, and then somebody went, wait, what if we did this? So, you know, the idea of not having to plan and having the flashbacks to run into those complications is, I mean, I think they're both methods are just equally viable.
Sure. All right, Drew. We now have the task of statting our draft picks. For those who listen to the regular episode, you know we are compiling a team that eventually will be made up of one mastermind and seven specialists. And so for this movie, I picked Chirrut Emwe as my for my team.
And I got K2SO for mine. And so, you know, we run into a problem choosing a system to stat. And one of the things with Kids on Bikes, it was great because, you know, we were always going to have mundane kids. That was going to be every single game, every movie, you got mundane kids, you use the same system across the board. With this, we have wildly, the heist genre is so kind of all over the place. And since we are not limiting ourselves to mundane anything, no one system is going to work. So what we're going to do is we are going to go kind of the agnostic route and just kind of come up with what you want to emphasize for your character creation. And if we come up with a system that we really like, we'll kind of go back with that. But I don't think we have to particularly worry about statting it so that, you know, anyone can play in a specific system. I think in the same way that we're going to create the truths of the character in the same way that we have the truths of a movie. So right. you follow the truths along here, you're going to be able to create a character regardless of the system that you're using. Rafe, would you like me to go first?
I would.
Okay. So I've got K2SO. And K2SO is a non-human character. So if you have a system that has specific rules for non-humans, make sure you're following those. I mean, K2SO is a droid, so they are going to have human-like emotions and reactions to a lot of things, but it is still non-human. So you're going to want to give bonuses to any kind of physical and mental stats. I would probably not give bonuses to things like dexterity or any kind of speed, because at no point in time does K2SO seem excited to go anywhere. but it can take a lot of damage and is very strong. And just minus modifications to any kind of social stats, because that's just not his bag. You must give them better than normal armor if that is available in the game. However, the armor works because, you know, we see as evidenced that K2SO can take a lot of shots and keep going. Skills, these kind of reflect on how you want to focus the speciality of this character, right? So in the movie, we see him as a pilot, a tactician, a statistician, and a computer hacker. So all of those are available. But if, for instance, you already have a hacker on your team and you don't think that K2SO is going to really be focusing on that, put your points in others. Like K2SO is almost like a bard in its ability of skills. Like it can mm-hmm. use a lot of different things. But I think choose what you want K2SO to focus in and go with that. One of the things I think, if you have a flaw or strength system in the game, give them unarmed. Because while he's very strong and can, you know, do things like bang two people together or, you know, punch and slam and stuff like that, until the end of the story, K2SO doesn't get a gun. He basically says, you never let me have a gun.
Right.
So don't give him a gun. Like, that's not what this character does. They are not a sharpshooter. So there's that. I like having to pair them with another character. In this case, Cassian is sort of his handler. He is programmed to obey his orders. So that is a limitation for the character. Sometimes you can do the follow the orders to the letter or mm-hmm. be careful about being pedantic around it because he he says, I have to do this. If you have, you're playing a system that has things like life points or hit points, give those really nice and high, because again, can take a lot of damage before the central processors go out. And I mean, it's like weird to end it on, but like low speed again, like I said, not really a, not a runner. Unlike Rafe's character, who is agile as all get out.
Who is everything as all get out, because when I think about the movie and I think about the character's performance in the movie and what he does, stats become a real challenge, because it's not as easy as going, okay, his physical skills go high, his mental skills go, no, he's smart. He's wise. His social skills go, no, he's kind of charismatic. Yeah. So like stats are a challenge. So I tried to think of him in general as kind of a monk class.
Right.
Which, if this is D20, you're going to prioritize your dexterity and your wisdom, you know, and that to me makes sense. But his skills, his stats are going to be higher than average. We're not going to have as many of those glorious negatives that Drew enjoys playing so much, because that's just not his character. I probably would put his health lower, so his constitution type thing lower, because he is older.
Sure.
Other than that, I mean, his stats really were more of a problem. I probably would also put his strength lower, because he had Baze with him to take care of, like, the strength.
Right.
So the idea of being paired with another character, he doesn't need to be, but you could definitely kind of go the same route as the movie does, and that they kind of complement each other. So he is fast and doesn't use guns, and he's paired with somebody who is strong and does use guns. So monk class, he's not going to use any armor. I was looking at the D&D monk class in particular and was like, yeah, this fits him to a T. You know,
really good, yeah.
Deflection of missiles, and yeah, I mean, like that kind of stuff. And skills-wise, you're going to go into, you know, acrobatics or athletics. I always have problems with those two, Drew. I have almost made them synonymous at my gaming table, which probably I'm going to get told I shouldn't do, but I feel like the difference between acrobatics and athletics is kind of semantics. You can tell me I'm wrong in a second. I also would go with perception, and I also would put skills into something like arcana or religion or history or such, because he is a guardian of the wills. He does know the history of that kind of stuff. We don't see it come into play as much in the movie, but that is very true to his character.
Yeah, I think insight, if you're, again, looking at D20 system, frequently rogues and bards will get something called expertise. And expertise, you get to choose a skill, and they kind of get an extra bonus in that. So even though you still treat your character as blinded for some effects, which is like disadvantages on things, if you up their perception, a good game master will allow you to make perception rolls, which they're going to get huge bonuses for, to allow them to do kind of cool things. I would also maybe give them a feat of lucky. That you get to do these kind of amazing, pull off these stunts that look incredible, as long as you don't look how the sausage is made, right? Like all the stats that go along into it, just let it flow through like the force. I mean, you could also just say they're blind and not actually give them the negatives for it, and it just use it as something. Like, at what point in time, other than finding one switch at the end, does that come into play? Also, right. the amazing joke with the bag over the head.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's just it. If you're playing a flaws and benefits type system, then yeah, you take blind and you take lucky, and it kind of balances each other out.
I think it's great. And I think, again, two really excellent picks. In fact, we are the only ones who think those are excellent picks. We turn now to our social media and see our folks' responses from almost exclusively from the Facebook page. So we turn to Graham. Graham always has something great to say about our draft picks. And Graham says, this was really hard. I've loved Forrest Whitaker since someone shouldn't have let me watch The Crying Game at that age. It's a very well crafted sentence. And I wore a VHS copy of Iron Monkey just out. That said, I agree with Drew that the heist is on Scarif. So Saw is out, so I can't choose Saw. And I agree with Rafe that classifying Chirrut is going to be nearly impossible, as we have just seen.
Yes.
And as much as I love Donnie Yen, it feels too much like a character I am not smart enough to handle properly. Well done. but I am very happy to go with Jyn Erso as an inhumanly driven lancer. That speech alone, damn.
Yeah. All right. So Graham is down for Jyn Erso. Got it.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard from Sarah yet about her choice, but... you know, again, I think it's only a matter of time before I post people's selections on on Facebook, and I'll just, if anybody else is listening, go, yeah, I choose these two, I'll put you up there as well. We'll get all everyone's team and just see how that kind of evolves.
Any other word on the episode that you want to talk about, Drew?
Cord responded, I'm pretty sure the first season of Rebels is 75% based on the West End Game Star Wars campaign.
Yeah, so I wouldn't doubt it.
I can't say anything about it. I haven't seen Rebels. And my friend Eric said, I would be shocked if someone involved in the movie, that being Rogue One, colon, a Star Wars story, didn't role play the very idea of who got the plans of the Death Star and how. Which, yeah, makes sense. I mean, like, I don't know if there was a module for that, but there should have been.
Right.
Because it would have been, I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer.
I feel like there was, but I don't know for sure.
Yes. We have talked a lot about just sort of the things that make a heist movie a heist movie. We have our three main kind of areas that we focus on, but we've used the term heist tropes a lot. And I have posted on our Facebook group, and I have mentioned on the podcast, what I'm calling the heist-o-matic, which I'm now just heisto or heist. And that is, rather than just go, these are the tropes that we see in these movies, because it is just the nature of myself and Rafe to make a game out of just about everything. We are going to make a game out of discussing the tropes. So what we've done is we have gone online. We have put 24 of the most popular heist tropes that we could think of into a bingo card generator. There is 24 plus a free space, so five rows of five. And we're going to just kind of go over the master list of the tropes and see whether or not we had these in Rogue One. Like, did we find them? And if so, I'll mark them on our two individual cards that we've gotten. We'll post the results on our Facebook page. So, Rafe, you want to start us off on our list there?
Sure. All right. So our first trope is the mastermind just got out of jail. We definitely see this in Ocean's 11. We see it in Rogue One if you classify Jyn Erso as a mastermind, which is one of the discussions we had last episode as to what was she classified as.
And I think that's because she's the one who, even though they didn't have a plan, she is the one who inspires everyone to act at that moment. I think it's the closest thing that we're going to get to a mastermind in this movie.
Sure. Next up is the heist isn't just about the money. Definitely, we even flat out hear that said in Ocean's 11 and Rogue One. It's not about money at all, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. Heist is not about the money. We also have putting the band back together. That is not something that we find in Rogue One.
No.
Because Ocean's 11, yes. Rogue One, no.
Ocean's 11, kind of, because like, some of them haven't worked together before, so it's not really putting the band back together in Ocean's 11. It's still kind of assembling the team. Some of them have worked together. Some of them are aware of each other, and then you have Linus.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think what you're getting is you're getting, you know, Frank joins the group again. You've got Danny. You've got Rusty. So, I mean, in some ways, they're getting back together. You know that Saul has worked them in the past. We get to know about their connection. So, like, in a way, I would argue that that would
sure
make it. The next one on the list is One Last Job. And honestly, even though they don't go into this situation in Rogue One as, we just have one last job and we can retire. Let's face it, they're not working again after this movie. So I think that counts.
Yeah. It definitely does not apply to Ocean's 11, though, since, you know, we have two other movies.
Absolutely not. All right, what's next?
First or third act betrayal or twist. And we kind of have this in both, but yet not in both. I would argue in Rogue One that the assassination attempt would be kind of a betrayal, but he also doesn't go through with it, which I guess is the twist on it. So, you know, you kind of have it there, and then you kind of have Danny is, you know, lying about Tess or hasn't told them about Tess, which could be seen as an act of betrayal, which is ultimately what gets him kicked off the team, except for, you know, that was all part of the plan.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think definitely in Rogue One, we've got, it's not as obvious as we're going to be in some of the future movies that we're going to watch. So this next one is backer holds a grudge or owes a favor or is owed a favor. We don't have that in Rogue One. Definitely Ocean's 11. You know, the fact that they bought out his hotel and then trashed it, that is held to grudge. So certainly he has a reason to, like, the whole reason that this heist even happens in Ocean's 11 is because, you know, he's willing to front that money.
Yep. Clearing their name. Again, you don't really have that in... They are trying to restore the polish to Ruben's name.
Yeah, the motivation for the heist is not to clear their name, though. So I think that's fair.
You know whose motivation to clear their name? That is their motivation.
Who's that?
Hudson Hawk.
Is true. And there's another one that applies to Hudson Hawk with that one, but not this next one, which is the mentor slash protege relationship, which we definitely get in Ocean's 11.
Yeah. With Linus. Yeah.
With Linus in particular. I don't know. I don't really think there's much of one. You could argue that maybe Galen and Bodhi, but that doesn't come across.
Well, I mean, you have Saw and Jin.
Yeah, I guess if we're considering Saw on the team, maybe. I just don't really feel he's part of the team for this one.
Right.
But I mean, if you want to include that, we can do that one for that one. All right, next up, we've got the new guy needs to prove themselves. Definitely in Rogue One, we've got that, right? Because
I'm the pilot.
Yeah. Bodhi doesn't really need to continue after he's delivered the message. And the fact that he sticks around, I wouldn't say that the narrative does not hinge on that decision, but it's certainly there.
And Linus, obviously, in Ocean's 11.
Oh, yeah, of course. So how about calling in a third party for help so the crew gets a late member? Does that work for Rogue One?
I mean, they call in a third party for help, but they don't get a late member. But I mean, the rebellion showing up is, we talked about the cavalry last time, but I wouldn't consider that giving them a late member, though.
Okay. How about revenge?
Oh, well, I mean, that's the main plot for both of them.
I mean, and we're going to see revenge in a lot of these movies, I think. How about recruited against their will?
I would argue that Jyn Erso is recruited against her will. She did not ask to be released from prison. She probably had her own plan for some means of escape. She didn't want to see Saw again. I mean, she gives them attitude about being back working with the Rebel Alliance. So, yeah, I definitely think she's recruited against her will.
Okay, agreed. Insider revealed in the third act. So this is not a betrayal. This is... it shows that at some point in time late in the film that someone was working as an inside person.
I don't think we have that. We know that Bodhi was working on the inside. We know that Galen was working for them, was helping them out. And it's definitely not revealed in the third act in either case. Okay. So, yeah, no.
How about enlisting the aid of the good guys? So, this is traditionally somebody who they're working against, they convince to come onto their side. I don't think we see that in either of these. There's no... I think everyone's on the team from the get-go. Then the other one is competitors have to team up, which is two groups working on the same mark realize that they have to team up together in order to get the job done. We don't get that in Rogue One.
I mean, you could argue that that's the Rebel Alliance, not wanting to take part in it and then kind of being encouraged to. Again, it could be the cavalry showing up. It could be competitors. I don't know. It doesn't really fit cleanly, though.
I think if Saw Gerrera... in like the third act had been more of a part and then suddenly went, no, we need to do this together.
He was in parts.
He was in parts. Well, after the explosion, there was only parts of him. Right. Yeah.
That's by third act.
There you go. How about crooked cops?
I mean, is Galen Erso a crooked cop? He's Imperial.
No. Yeah, but he's neither a cop nor crooked. I think he's the opposite of that. And the Imperium, they're just fascists, so I don't think that counts as crooked cops,
Are the bouncers that rough up Danny considered crooked cops?
No, I think they work for the casino and
okay. Then no, we don't have that in either one either.
We have one where right where I left it, a needed item
appears kind of like almost miraculously. I don't think either one really shows up. Unless you want to cart the Death Star plans, that's right where I left them.
I was going to say, Danny has the opposite of it, where he doesn't even have the batteries.
Batteries,
right in there.
Yeah. All part of the plan, which is what seems like a failure is actually a success. I mean, Ocean's 11, the entire Ocean series is based around that.
Right.
So yes for that one. I don't think anyone has that kind of, again, there's no plan. There's no plan in Rogue One. Ragtag bunch of misfits.
That's so, Rogue One in a nutshell right there.
That is Rogue One in a nutshell. So like they have less of a crew and they're more of an actual ragtag bunch of misfits.
Right.
Which if you look at the TV Tropes website, they definitely delineate between a caper crew and a ragtag bunch of misfits. How about Plan C? Not really, right?
Not really. I mean, kind of in Rogue One, they definitely go to their backup plan, but it's not. Yeah, they don't get to Plan C.
Yeah. Then we have the Robin Hood resolution, which is they're not doing it for themselves. They're doing it for a greater good, which, you know, I guess you could argue that with Rogue One.
I don't think you have to argue that. I think it's right there.
Well, I think with the Robin Hood resolution, you're looking at, you think they're going to keep it. And then maybe during the heist, they start to side with the rebels, you know, that kind of a thing where it's just like, we're just giving it all away. So if you think that, I will certainly include that one. You think Robin Hood resolution for Rogue One?
No, I mean, I think that they're definitely doing it for the greater good, but it's more, you know, Han Solo leaving without his reward in A New Hope.
Exactly, yeah,
that's the Robin Hood resolution type thing.
Someone from their past recognizes them.
Saul!
Ocean's 11, 100%. Rogue One, could we argue that with... you said Saul, but you could easily have said Saw!
Yes.
Saw Gerrera and Jyn Erso recognizing each other.
Does Director that... Krennic recognizing Jyn Erso, kind of.
Yeah, okay. I think that counts with that one. That makes sense. And then finally, do they fail due to temptation?
Well, I mean, in Oceans, we're meant to think that Danny is failing due to temptation, but he isn't really. But no, I don't think we have that one in either one of them either.
Yeah. They succeed. And if they fail for any reason, it's because their whole planet gets exploded. So, yeah. All right. I will put the results of our heists up and see people can see how we individually did. What do you think? Are you ready to answer some questions about podcast homework?
Oh, boy. I had the perfect answer to this, and it much like your
fixer dream,
it faded away.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll read the question out.
I have an answer.
Okay. All right. I'll also read the question out just in case anyone missed. I will read responses from Facebook first, and then we'll go on to our answer.
Okay.
So the podcast homework for this one, it was, in Ocean's 11, the crew has to break into a high-tech secured location within a popular tourist destination surrounded by people. So what popular location, either real life or fictional, do you think would make a fun or challenging spot to hold a role-playing game or even a movie heist? And this can be either fun for you as a GM or fun for you as a player. So over on Facebook, Graham said, and I think a lot of us probably had this thought, but what I think sets Graham's answer apart is the term wholesome. So he says, how about a wholesome heist in Cinderella's castle in Disney World? Now, Disney World is the perfect answer for this one, I believe, mainly because I think having your players dress up, it could be a fictional Disney World too, like the Disney World of whatever realm you in, but the idea of them dressing up as popular IP and then having to avoid enthusiastic children and adult Disney fans would make the heist so much more fun.
I actually did think of that as when I was first thinking about the homework, and it reminded me of the – it's apparently a series of novels. I only ever read the first one, but Kingdom Keepers, which was kind of this fictionalized – well, not fictionalized. It was a story that kind of was about like the Disney villains coming to life at the parks and these kids trying to stop them, and they broke into Disney World as part of it. So –
yeah, I think those books, again, as a librarian who's shelved them a lot, I haven't read them. They're huge. They're much bigger than I was expecting them to be. If you want a lighter version of that, there's a really excellent one. The character's name is Theodosia Throckmorton, and her parents are curators at a museum, and they keep on bringing cursed objects into the museum, at completely oblivious to the fact that the objects are cursed, and at night, Theodosia and her talking cat go into the museum and have to like defeat. It's sort of like think of Night of the Museum.
Right.
But
what is the story? Because I know that name.
I think they made a TV series out of it.
Okay.
I think they just call it Theodosia.
Okay. All right.
But it was a series of books first. I think there's three in the trilogy.
Okay. All right.
As most trilogies are. Okay. So Graham suggested Cinderella's Castle in Disney World. Rafe, what popular location, real or fictional, would you like to hold an RPG?
Well, I mean, the main idea that I had has been done,
right,
but it wasn't really a heist, and that was Fort Knox, which we see broken into in Goldfinger, but it's not really a heist.
Well, I want to pause for a moment and tell our listeners a story. many years ago, when we still got charged for long distance phone calls, I don't remember if I called you or you called me, but this is 30 years ago. I was watching Goldfinger with the volume on low, and as we were talking, you stopped the conversation and went, "Are you watching Goldfinger?" And he goes, "I recognize the score." And I'm like, "This nerd recognizes a movie by its score? Who does that?" And now it's all of us. So I like the idea of Fort Knox. In particular, if you could, in your story, make Fort Knox public, like maybe the one day of the year they let a school group tour or something along those lines, to make it like kind of public and give a lot of people, so it's not just armed guards everywhere.
Well, the alternatives I had, hilariously, were both done in the same franchise, which is the White House.
Uh-huh.
And the Alamo, which were done in National Treasure, and then the National Treasure Disney Plus series that was out last year.
Which I still haven't seen. As soon as you say Alamo, of course, I'm thinking Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and I was trying to figure out when did Pee-wee go to the White House. And now Pee-wee Goes to the White House should have been the third movie. My first thought, of course, was Disneyland, and I thought I was coming up with the ideas. And one of the things I really love
about Disneyland or Disney World is that you can
get maps of them already existing. And so the idea, how cool would it be if the heist starts and the map that they're using is the one that you could buy in the gift shop versus like one of these high-tech ones?
Sure.
But rather than going the Disney route, I wanted something a little bit more regional. And I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if you pulled off a heist at Dollywood? It's public. It's got a theme. There's a lot of musical numbers involved.
It would actually be a musical heist.
I think I would feel more guilty about disappointing Dolly than I would about disappointing Walt.
Okay, so I have an answer to that response because I thought the exact same thing. Doesn't say that you're robbing from Dolly.
Right.
It could be that your heist is stopping Dolly from being robbed. I mean, we're talking about a woman who donates books to kids. So nothing ever is happening to her. She is a saint as far as I'm concerned. Her and Dorothy Mantooth. But what I want to make sure is you have something on. And the other one I had was a little bit more Star Wars themed. And I thought it would be kind of fun to play Imperials, having a heist on Coruscant the day of the Battle of Endor. So when you get those final scenes at Return of the Jedi, where, you know, whatever version of Yub Nub you're preferring, if it was the
Yub Nub.
Yeah, the 97 version where, or I guess, did it come out in 97, 98? Whatever they re-released with all the extra footage.
That got rid of Yub Nub.
Comes out. What's that?
They got rid of Yub Nub.
They got rid of Yub. Oh, and so you're right. They got rid of it and they include all the other things. But we see all the celebrations happening. I really like the idea where this is the beginning of kind of kicking the Empire to the curb, even though it's not over yet, right? The New Order hasn't been formed. I had to look up some of this information. I was like, what is it called when you know, the Battle of Endor? It wasn't that big a deal, apparently. The movies lead us to believe it because we were only going to have three movies. But in the grand scheme of things, apparently, it was just the beginning of the end of the Empire. But I really like the idea of Imperials doing it during the celebration when all the pro-rebellion folks are out on the streets and throwing confetti and celebrating and not singing Yub Nub. So those are my two possible ones.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you our next podcasting homework. And I'm not super proud of this one. It's real easy, though. So in both Rogue One : A Star Wars Story and my next pick, which we haven't discussed yet, the mastermind is busted out of prison early in the film. So my question is, what movie has your favorite jailbreak sequence that we can turn into a role-playing game? So now this can be either breaking out of jail or breaking into jail. So just be thinking about what movie has your favorite jailbreak sequence in it. Okay. I think that's a pretty simple one.
Yeah. All right, Drew, you just alluded to it, so it is now time for you to reveal. What is our next heist movie?
Yeah, so I'm not going to tell you the movie that I was going to pick, because it's definitely something I'm going to pick later on. But I have the Google Doc already written for that film. I knew I was going to select. I had all my talking points for it. I was all prepped for it. But there's a couple of things that occurred to me when I was organizing my movies the other day, and that was, more than almost anything else, I'd be really bummed if we had two movies in a row that that didn't have proper songs in their soundtrack for our Steal a Song. And the movie I was gonna select was a Hays Code film. You know, one of the first heist films, and there's about six of them that could fall into that. So, you know, I'm not giving anything away by saying that. I think eventually we need to choose a black and white film that's, you know. So I looked at my collection of heist films and I said, I need something that's going to be fun and exciting that maybe falls somewhere in the median of Ocean's 11, the kind of the quality, snappy dialogue, fancy dress, cool and stylish, versus the rough and tumble heist of Rogue One : a Star Wars Story. So I'm going to go with a film from 2011. I'm laughing because I had never watched this film. It was on my list because everyone recommended to me. And so, Rafe, this week, I lied to you. I'm sorry. I did lie to you. I have watched one movie. It was this movie. I watched my first Fast and the Furious movie.
Yes!
And so the movie that I'm going to be selecting for our next episode is 2011's Fast Five.
Yes. You posted to Facebook that you had seen this, and I was immediately disappointed because I was looking forward to picking this later in the season, and you having not seen it yet. I even told my girlfriend when I saw that you'd seen it, I was like, damn it, he's seen it. It's not going to be quite as much fun, but so we're doing it now, and I don't have
now
to pick it.
Now we're doing it now. I have a lot of thoughts about this movie, both as a film and as a heist film. But that will have to be discussed in 2 weeks. So stay tuned for that. So until then, you can find this podcast on all podcatchers. You can email us at theneversaydiepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at Never Say Diecast. Please join the group. We are on X at Never Say Diecast.
Thanks to Chris Talent for our pulse-pounding theme song. Really, pulse-pounding should have been saved for next month. But anyway, thanks to Chris Talent for our pulse-pounding theme song and Megan Daly for our iconic show artwork. And if you like what you've heard, why not leave us a 5-star review? As we said, you can find the podcast anywhere that podcasts are found. Leaving us a review helps others find the show. It makes us feel loved and wanted, and it strokes Drew's ego.
It's true. And remember, even if you think you have the answer, but it was all a dream, never say die.